Scott, I think it's been a long time on this show since we've had an Adolf Hitler quote. And, well, you cited one to me just before the rejoin. Let it be known that that I have written extensively on Adolf Hitler. And I've done so not because I am in any way inspired by him, because I'm not. I'm revolted by him. Not in any way because I'm aligned with him. I am not. I am wholly and completely opposed to him. But when I was composing Prophet of Doom, compiling, really, Prophet of Doom, and I was studying the words and deeds of Muhammad as they are revealed in the Quran and Hadith, and putting the Quran into the context of Muhammad's life and reordering it chronologically based upon the biological and historical portraits of the first Muslims and of Muhammad's words and deeds, it struck me that Muhammad was extraordinarily similar to Adolf Hitler. A friend of mine had a copy of Mein Kampf. It was the first copy of Mein Kampf that was actually translated into English. It was translated into English and published for Americans in particular to read and Europeans to read prior to Adolf Hitler declaring war and starting World War II. And it was written as, you need to understand this, folks. This is really important to understand the religion that this man has conceived called Mein Kampf and how he is going to deploy German troops in pursuit of his religious identity. And so what I ended up doing is I juxtaposed 77 pages of Prophet of Doom, where I put Adolf Hitler's rant right next to Muhammad's rant. And apart from people in place, they're indistinguishable. And so that's the only reason I would ever quote him, is that I want to quote Mein Kampf to show how similar Mein Kampf is to my recital, the Quran. In fact, Mein Kampf is the second best-selling book in the Islamic world. So that being the case, one of the things that I recognized, Scott, when I was reading Mein Kampf, is that while Mein Kampf is panned as horrible writing, Adolf Hitler was an extraordinarily sick and disturbed man. Mein Kampf has many things in it that correctly assess the condition of man. Now, what did Adolf Hitler say on behalf of Der Führer, the leader like himself? What did he recognize in people that made it possible for him to promote his agenda?
His atrocities against humanity?
Yeah.
He said, what luck for rulers that men do not think.
What luck for rulers that men do not think. Wow. You know, it's true. If men and women thought, there would be no governments such as there are today. If men and women thought, there'd be no religions. There'd be no governments. There'd be no militaries. I mean, the only reason that there are countries and militaries and religions is that men and women don't think. Now, he's right in this regard and was wrong in how he used it. Now, we, Scott, can take the approach of the vast preponderance of men and women don't think. They are indoctrinated. They are misled. They are misguided. They do not invest the time to come to understand the evidence that is available or make the connections necessary to understand. And therefore, they're incapable of, without good information and without the proper process to yield understanding, they're incapable of exercising good judgment. And a huge part of that, of course, is the purpose of political correctness. Political correctness is specifically designed to discourage people from exercising good judgment. We could take one of two approaches, realizing that that was the case, that the vast preponderance of people do not think. One would be, we could be like other leaders, and we could promote a lie that was self-serving and take advantage of people's unwillingness to think. Or we could take the approach of, let's encourage people to think. Let's reveal to people the tendencies of society to discourage thinking and to present the consequence of that and present evidence that is worthy of consideration along with the tools required to transition from information to understanding.
And then not force them to follow those rules, but let them choose to?
Yes.
I'll take choice,
yes,
too.
I'll take choice, too. You know, and in fact, as I was saying it, we could. I recognized that I was actually saying something that was untrue, not attempting to say something that's untrue. But when I said that, you know, we could choose to mislead people for our own selfish interests, well, the fact is that it's not really in anyone's interest to mislead. You know, those people who sell products on this network who are misleading the consumer because they're trying to personally prosper, they're really not doing something that's in their best interest. If you and I were to come up with some scheme that somehow enriched us or aggrandized us or gave us some influence and control, we wouldn't be doing something that was in our interest. When we encourage people to reject human institutions and we encourage them to consider what Yahweh is offering, we're actually doing something that is in our interest and their interest. So, you know, it's amazing that people, for what they would consider would be temporary gain, would mislead, abuse people, really, for their own selfish enrichment, when in fact the money that they gain from this, the empowerment that they gain from this, is actually counterproductive to them. That's the bottom line. You know, I spent a lot of time studying people when I was growing up because I realized my father was very unhappy, and he was a man that was born poor and was self-made and became fairly affluent. And it seemed like the more he succeeded in gaining riches and making money, the less happy he became. So I then became the realization that studies had shown that the sons of successful fathers were almost 20 times, I mean, it's a huge number, more likely to commit suicide, more likely to do things in their life that were counterproductive. And I began to then study human character and to say, wait a minute, you know, my father having been successful now and being miserable in the process has gained the ability to at least break bread with, to get to know other people who had been financially successful. And what I found is there seemed to be a direct, an inverse correlation, if you will, an inverse correlation with happiness, self-satisfaction, enjoyment of life, and wealth. That the more money somebody had, the more unhappy they really became. They were more prone to divorce. They were more prone to arguments and battles that were vicious. They were more prone to all forms of aggravation than the person who lived a simple life, who focused on what was important, which is family. And they had all these distractions that took them away from what was important, and then the jealousies and the infighting within families to get a larger share of the money created a miserable situation. So even those who would seek to enrich themselves, rather than doing so, they impoverish themselves. And that's kind of the neat thing about Yahweh's covenant. There is none of us who are covenant children that are seeking to be enriched. It's just a natural part of the process where Yahweh enriches us. And the interesting thing is, rather than going into the covenant and say, well, you know, if it's just Scott and I, and Scott and I and Kirk, or Scott and I and Kirk and Larry, you know, if it's just the four or five of us, boy, there'll be so much more between us, and let's just not invite anybody else in because we'll have to share it with them. When in fact, the more people who become part of the covenant, the richer we're all going to be. Because it's different perspectives and different personalities and different attitudes that are going to make what we're inheriting so much more fun. So it's the antithesis. It's the more we can give away, the more that we can share without any monetary benefit, the richer and the happier we become. So it's really in our interest. It really is in our interest, to tell you the truth. It's in our interest, even though we get major pushback from society, to expose and condemn the warts of human institutions. It's in our interest to give away Intro to God and yadayah.com, introtogod.org, and yadayah.com, and questioningpaul.com, even prophetofdoom.net. It is in our interest, selfishly, really, to give these things away freely, to do this show freely, without any monetary remuneration. It is in our interest because there are those who heed these words, who pay attention to what Yahweh in particular has to say, who, when exposed to the myths of human institutions, reject them. And many of those who reject them come to know Yahweh, come to be part of his covenant. And, my friends, that's worth accomplishing. When that happens, then we get to know individuals now who are extraordinary as brothers and sisters and get to spend eternity with them. That's the most enriching thing we can do. You know, Yahweh figured this out. Yahweh figured that if he took everything that is his, which happens to be the entire universe for all time, and all of the power in the universe, and all of the knowledge and understanding in the universe, if he took everything that is his and gave it all away to us, that he would become infinitely richer. He figured that out. That is ultimately the plan that is the covenant. Let me, as Yahweh, give everything that I have to my children, my covenant children, as an inheritance. And if I give them everything that I have, which is the entire universe, then I will be enriched forever for having done so. The nature of a father, the nature of a mother, the purpose of family. It is the explanation of the covenant. We'll be back. The person most responsible of all of the humans who have come this way to lead the most people away from this marvelous covenant that Yahweh has to offer, the person who took most advantage, the greatest advantage, over men's unwillingness to think, the person who has misled more souls to their detriment than anyone in human history, the person whose insecurities were so raging that he was willing to side with the devil to mislead people, to create a legacy for himself that cost him his soul and the soul of everyone who believes him, is known to Christians as Paul. He is author of half of the Christian New Testament. He prevailed in creating the religion of Christianity because, well, Adolf Hitler was right. He was lucky, if you want to call it that, that men and women don't think. Now, that wasn't always the case. When Paul first broadcast his lies, both in preaching and in writing, virtually everyone rejected him. If you read his first letter, that to the Galatians, he will call those who he preached to morons. And he will rant angrily at them because they immediately upon his departure rejected everything he had to say. They were thoughtful. They realized it was an absolute impossibility that Paul was telling the truth. And it is. If the person, if you are even remotely thoughtful, you will reject Paul. There is no way that you can be thoughtful and accept Paul as speaking the truth. Impossible. So what Paul ran into is that as the audience that he spoke to was informed well enough and was thoughtful enough to universally reject his rant, which was first directed at those he tried to influence who rejected him in Galatia. And by the way, the exact same thing happens in both of the Corinthian letters and in both of the letters to Thessalonica, that virtually everyone whom Paul tried to influence, who he tried to sell his bogus malarkey to, rejected it. And the letters exist as affirmation of that. And then what we find is that next, Paul turns on the disciples, those that Yosha himself chose and taught and lived with. And he then attacks them and says that their testimony was absolutely meaningless, to be totally and completely disregarded. And by the end of his life, Paul admits to Timothy that everyone abandoned him, that everyone, that would include even Luke, his biographer, rejecting him. Because all you have to do is to come to know what Paul said and to think about it, and you'll reject him. It's just think. If you're willing to think, you'll be free of the myths of this dogma of death that was perpetrated by Paul. And so the person in all of human history that has created the greatest plague of death, that has caused the most souls to die estranged from God, because later people were encouraged not to think, was Paul. And the only reason that Paul's mantra ultimately prevailed is because Rome saw to it that thinking became way too costly for most individuals to endure. When Theodosius imposed Roman Catholicism on the empire, where the choice became accept Roman Catholicism or die, and die a horrible death, most people accepted the religion so they would not be killed. And once that happened, where people were willing to accept the religion based upon faith because they did not want to be tortured and killed, thinking was suppressed by fear. That exists today. If you're willing to think, if you're willing to exercise good judgment, there are harsh consequences that await you in our society. And most people have been conditioned by birth not to exercise good judgment, not to think. And as a result, today, the preponderance of people are fooled and played for as fools. The reason I said that it's impossible to think and to accept Paul is that Paul's proposal is preposterous. It's frankly appalling. Paul claims that he was appointed by God to have exclusive domain over the entire world, apart from Jews, whom he condemns. So the Jews who he universally condemns, and specifically condemning Yosha's apostles, he then has total autonomy, total authority, according to him, given to him by God over the entire rest of the world. And that he, in making this claim, then goes about trashing Yahweh's reputation and his testimony. He says that the Torah cannot save. Yahweh says exactly the opposite, that the Torah is the means to salvation. He says that the Torah enslaves. Yahweh says exactly the opposite, that it liberates. He claims that the old system, which became known as the Old Testament, is pornography. Yahweh says that it is the means to restoration. It is his guidance to humankind. He claims that there was an old covenant which is no longer in effect, and that he is the author of the new covenant. Yahweh says there's only one covenant. He's very clear that while the covenant will be reaffirmed, there will never be a new one. And it will be reaffirmed, but it has not yet been reaffirmed. It will be reaffirmed upon his return. And with Yisrael and with Yahudim, not with Gentiles and not with a Christian church. Paul's every word undermines and contradicts the very God, impugns really, the very God he claims appointed him. Now, think just how preposterous that is, folks, that God would authorize someone to undermine and contradict everything he has said and done. It is so ridiculous that if you're the least bit thoughtful, I mean just a tiny little bit thoughtful, you will reject Paul. You will reject him as the greatest and most deadly scoundrel who ever lived. And here's a man that claims to be demon-possessed, as he does in his second letter to the Galatians. He claims that or to the Corinthians. He claims that he's insane, and he is. He claims that he's a charlatan, pretending to be what he's not. He admits to being a sexual pervert. He admits to being vicious and murderous. He admits to being religious, something that Yahweh overtly opposes. And yet, 2.5 billion people on this planet are part of a religion that was conceived entirely by Paul, when it is absolutely obvious and undeniable to anyone who's the least bit rational and thoughtful that Paul's proposal is absolutely preposterous. He claims to speak for a person that Christians identify with as Jesus Christ, although that name is completely bogus, and yet he never once quotes him. And worse than that, he claims to be authorized by a God who he never cites accurately, and whose testimony he routinely undermines, and then says, "But I, Paul, say," as if we should care about what an admittedly possessed, demon-possessed, insane, and perverted man would have to tell us, particularly when that man claims to speak for the very God he is contradicting and undermining. This is not difficult. The only thing that precludes the vast preponderance of people from recognizing this reality is that they have been conditioned by their religion to reject evidence and reason that is contrary to their faith. And they have been conditioned by the media, by their politicians, and by academia to refrain at all costs from exercising good judgment. These two factors are what separate people from the truth, from thinking. So while it is in the leader's short-term and selfish interests that people do not think, whether they be religious leaders or political leaders or military leaders or economic leaders, that people do not think about the fraud that is fiat money and central banking, about the fraud that is patriotism and military protection, about the fraud that is hope in religion and peace in religion, about the fraud that is politics providing a better world for people to live. This unwillingness to think has enabled these human institutions to defraud and to deceive billions. And it is only those who are willing to reject the human mantra and to say, no, if something is wrong, I'm going to reject it. If something is false, I'm going to deny it. And I'm going to continue to search not only for the reasons to reject things that are clearly false, but until I find something that is credible is true. And that's why Yahweh was so kind to us when we realized that his testimony is not only the antithesis of human testimony, without contradiction, wholly and completely consistent, brilliant. In fact, the deeper and more closely you look, the more revealing, the more wonderful, the more brilliant the testimony and plan. But Yahweh was very generous to us. While he didn't need to do so, simply sharing who he is and what he's offering would have been more than sufficient for anyone open to the truth. But he went way beyond that. He provided us with absolute proof that he authored and inspired the words that we read in his Torah and his prophets, that he provided as guidance. And he did so through prophecy, providing thousands upon thousands of precise predictions that have come to be realized throughout time, so that many of these predictions materialized throughout the generations, throughout the world, so that no matter when you live, there were prophecies that were imminent, and there were prophecies recently fulfilled, prophecies way back through history, and prophecies yet future that looked as if they would come true the next day. Also, that every generation would have absolute proof that Yahweh exists outside of the constraints of time, that he doesn't exist within the four dimensions of time and space, but outside of those dimensions in a seventh dimension, able, therefore, to present our future to us in our past, so that we would have absolute and undeniable proof for those who examine the evidence and who are reasonable that he exists, that his name is Yahweh, that he has established his Torah as guidance on our behalf, and that therein he has presented the greatest gift that has ever been offered humankind, the covenant. And with that covenant, its five conditions, all of which are to our benefit, and its five benefits, all of which are extraordinary. And therein is the story of a God proving his existence, proving his inspiration, something he did not need to do, so that we would know that we can trust him, that we can rely upon him, and take advantage of what he is offering. And yet, rather than read the brilliant words and marvelous plan that is authored by the actual creator of the universe, the author of life, the inspiration behind the guidance, humankind would rather put their faith in avowed liars like Paul and his Christian religion, like Muhammad and his Islamic religion, like Adam Weishaupt and Huxley and Marx and their socialist secular religion, or even in his time, Adolf Hitler and his people's religion, Mao, in communism, with his little red book. They'd rather believe the liar to get along, to survive, than they would dare to confront the truth. Your soul, however, is worth it. And what little you may forego in this life to disassociate with human political and patriotic, economic, and religious institutions, so that you're freed of these things and open to establishing a covenant relationship with Yahweh, what little you give up, you will find wasn't worth having, and will be considered on the other side of this equation as something that you gained tremendously from jettisoning yourself from. And what you get beyond that is extraordinary. Total and complete perfection. Immortality. Being adopted into the very family of the Creator of the universe. Having all of the freedoms and rights and privileges that go with being God's kid. To having a personal, one-on-one, family-oriented, father-child relationship with Yahweh. Being enriched by his guidance, his teaching, by all that he has to share, and being empowered by his spirit so that we too grow and exist in the seventh dimension, infinitely in so many ways, superior to where we are presently. We inherit all of time, all of the universe, every bit of knowledge, everything that is worthwhile, all sharing it with our covenant family, with Yahweh himself. If you haven't already, do yourself a favor. Come to know Yahweh. Feel free to question everything he had to say. Feel free to scrutinize every word. If you're feeling ambitious, then I would encourage you to buy a copy of what's called the Dead Sea Bible that will put in italics the changes that the Messorites wrote, the copy edits that they provided, and how that differ from the oldest copies of the Dead Sea Scrolls. So you'll have access to what is on the oldest manuscript, because the Masoretic text is available online. So then you, with the Dead Sea Scrolls Bible, you can compare their changes, because every change they make is italicized. So that'll give you a nice research tool to look at the oldest extant testimony of what Yahweh had to say. Then there are many free tools of lexicons and dictionaries that render Hebrew into English. You'll need a number of them because they're all published by religious entities and they all have misleading information, but you can go to the roots of the words, take a little time, look at the verbal meaning of that forms the basis of each noun, the actionable meaning, examine the nature of the grammar, where things are always true, that there's no past, present, or future tense, that things are eternally true. Come to know something about the stems, which are all relational, and the moods, which are all volitional. Now, if you want a little help, and sometimes that's a good thing, a little handrail, I've written yadayah.com, yadayah.com. I've written introtogod.org, just introtogod.org. Both available free in their entirety, that provides you an introduction to what Yahweh had to say, an introduction to the Hebrew language, the basic skills that you'll need, the tool chest, if you will, to examine his testimony. Then I walk you through the process of doing it, explain to you how to translate, give you the words that you can go verify for yourself, and reveal through this process the most important things to know. If you want to come to know who Yahweh is, if you want to engage in a relationship with him, if you want to understand what he's offering and how to take advantage of it, it's all presented in yadayah.com and introtogod.org. In fact, in these books, you will not only find what Yahweh has to say, but absolute proof that he exists, that his name is Yahweh, and that he inspired the words which you'll be considering. And if you're still a Christian, by all means, read questioningpaul.com. Just questioningpaul.com. It's 1,200 pages that proves absolutely and overwhelmingly that Paul was a false prophet and that you should reject the religion of Christianity that he conceived. Because it's only after you have separated yourselves from religious and political myths that you'll be in a position where you'll even be open to what Yahweh has to say, much less be able to engage in his covenant. And you will find the terms and conditions of that covenant, one and only covenant with five conditions for participating. And you'll come to understand how each of those is in your benefit. To walk away, disassociate from Babel, from religious and political confusion, from your country, from its propaganda and its patriotism and its militarism. To walk away from these things, from the institutions of man. And then to walk to God, trusting and relying upon him. And allowing him to perfect you. And to do so by closely examining and carefully considering the terms and conditions of the covenant. And to realize that as parents, our signature, our sign that we have accepted this covenant is to circumcise our sons. And as men, if we had not had fathers and mothers that did this on our behalf to make certain that we are circumcised, because it is the sign of the covenant. And it is a brilliant sign, an appropriate sign. But it is Yahweh's sign. So, those are the five conditions for participating in the covenant. The benefits are out of this world. They are immortality and perfection, adoption into God's family, enrichment and empowerment. And they are all provided through the first four invitations that Yahweh has provided for us to meet with him. Invitations to be welcomed into his family. Pesach, Matzah, Bukkotim, and Shavuah. It is a wonderful story. It is a generous offer. It is a merciful plan. He is a wonderful God. His name is Yahweh. Please, come to know him.